Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We found Dean Martin. He's actually alive. He came in studio. The whole death was made up. Thank you, Dean. Appreciate that. We bring
this
up.
Thanks, Dino.
Yep. We bring this up because this is...
They had a Jerry for him.
What a jackass he is. Go to YouTube and just watch some Jerry Lewis interviews. Funny, talented, horrible human being. The Baby It's Cold Outside drama has been going on for a while. And not just this year, but it's been heightened this year because you've had multiple radio stations saying, no more. No more. Look at the lyrics. We're more aware. We are not going to play Baby It's Cold Outside. Some are involved in polling. Okay. Not that type of poll. Calm down, Adam. It's a San Francisco radio station where right now 90% of the voters have said, keep it. We like it. A bunch of outlets have commented on this, including Gail King on CBS This Morning. Here's what Gail had to say, and I'm normally on Team Gail on almost everything. I think if you look at the intent of the song, when you look at the intent, to me, it's a very flirtatious back and forth between the two of them. I think you can look at anything and read something into it these days. And I just don't think that was the case when they wrote that song. It's not the intent of the song. I think we have to look at that. Now, the video along with this, Carter, showed a man who was being rather aggressive with a woman, grabbing her hand, stopping her, preventing her from doing anything. The man, by the way, I discovered, Ricardo Montalban. Don't know if the Corinthian leather was there.
What? This is a video for the song?
Said the footage that aired of Esther Williams and Ricardo Montalban performing this song in Neptune's Daughter. You familiar with Neptune's Daughter? Gail said, hey, I'm calling it out. Now, Nora pointed out the footage because Ricardo is fairly aggressive. Is this just we're off the charts being PC? I mean, she's trying to leave, Carter. The baby is trying to leave, and the guy said, hey, it's cold outside. Stick around. My mom's wondering what's going on. No, stay here. To PC, or we have finally opened up our eyes on this one. Let's get your thoughts. A number of people have chimed in through Facebook, facebook.com/Chad Hartman Show, facebook.com/Chad Hartman Show, or text away 81807 or call 651-989-9226. All right, Dave, through this unknown website called Wikipedia, is going to share with us the origin, the story behind the story of the song, Baby It's Cold Outside.
Are you familiar with the name Frank Lesser, American songwriter of the 40s?
I saw his name, and I was wondering if it was Lesser or Loser, because it'd be a tough name to have, right?
It is tough.
Yeah. Tell me about Frank.
Well, he wrote the song during the 40s. Hollywood celebrities, and they attended parties. Apparently, they were expected to perform a little something.
Oh!
So in 1944, he wrote Baby It's Cold Outside. His wife, Lynn Garland, and he would perform it at a housewarming party in New York City at a little hotel. They sang the song.
Well, la-dee-da.
To indicate to guests that it was time to leave. And get this, Lesser often introduced himself as, quote, the evil of two lessers.
Oh,
because
yeah,
of the role he played
sure
in the song.
In other words, hit the road. We're done with you.
Mm-hmm.
Carter, hey, it's time to go. Party is over. Adam Carter, PC, or we weren't paying attention all along. This song is disgusting.
As much as I loathe the anti-PC blowback because I think it gives license to people to basically be racist at times and, you know, oh, I should be able to say this.
Yeah, it's First Amendment. I can say anything.
Yeah, this one I'm siding with Lighten Up, Francis.
Lighten Up, Francis.
It's a song that was written in the 40s.
So in other words, cornering a woman and grabbing your arm is okay. Dave, sounds like he's...
It's a song that was written in the 40s, and I just think, you know, if you don't like the song, then, you know, tune it out. You don't have to play it at your holiday party.
Now, you can't go with that. If you don't like the song, don't listen.
Why not?
Well, because that's not allowed on the show. You have to have an opinion. It's like, if you don't like us, don't listen to us.
Well...
Don't listen to us. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if you don't, well, why would you?
Yeah,
you
but I mean, like if you, let's say if you find a song or a show or something objectionable, you can have an opinion and say that.
Oh, absolutely.
About, right.
But I just, to me, it's, you know, times have changed. People have evolved. Most of us, you know, if the song were written by Harvey Weinstein 2 years ago, then I'd say, yeah, you know what? This song's probably a little much.
You need to see the footage, though, of Ricardo. Dave, did you watch the footage of Ricardo?
I've seen it, yeah.
It's disconcerting.
A little bit. I mean, that's one music video. That's one person's take on it, I guess,
yeah.
The director. No, I mean, come on. It's 1944.
Can he bar the door, you guys are saying?
Not necessarily that, but if you listen to pop music in the last 20 years?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If we're going to get rid of this song, I mean, shut her down for pop music.
Yes, throw it out. I mean, more of the lyrics. My mother will start to worry. Beautiful, what's your hurry? My father would be pacing the floor, listen to the fireplace roar. So I better scurry. Beautiful, please don't hurry. Well, maybe just a half drink more. Put some records on while I pour. Are they some of your moves, Carter, back in, you know, college?
No.
No, these were not.
How about the neighbors might think, baby, it's bad out there. Say, what's in this drink?
Yeah, that's the line, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get
what's
why some people are
drink?
Offended, but when you're going to talk about it without the context of when and why it was written, come on. Jeez. Is that what we say, lighten up, Francis, on this show? Is that how we do this?
I think, but again, you're right. Say, what's in the drink? Adam, you're okay with that, too?
I'm not okay with the action. I'm saying I'm okay with it being a song in the 40s that was written in jest and is a good duet, especially the original version played with Dean Martin.
Especially as long as she stays for you, Adam, and you're satisfied.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I mean, I think that's what
rape
it is.
Rape is okay. That's what I'm saying.
That's going to be your hot take today. Dave, when we do the interview of the show, Adam Carter said, and then just play that completely out of context.
I think that's fair to do, yeah. I mean, the line doesn't necessarily mean there's a roofie in the drink, right? She could just be saying, hey, is this a Diet Coke or a regular? I don't know.
Adam, is that what you thought?
It was just, no.
She didn't like it? Did we have roofies back in the 40s? We had something, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, probably.
Regardless whether it's offensive, it's just not a good song. Is it a good song?
I think it is a good song. I like it. Like I like the Dean Martin version.
Yep.
How just about, one of those that it's like tradition and you hear it. And
how about the,
can the we, music?
Can we play the Willie and Nora one again? What's in the drink? You can't get out of here. There's no rides. Adam Carter. What's in the drink? There's no way of escaping here. More of the comments on Facebook. I get it as a classic and may have been progressive for the era. However, today we're trying to teach people to stop being coy and say what you mean so there isn't confusion about how many times and what tone of voice you say. Gotta love those sensitive snowflakes, as I keep reading Facebook here. I can see both sides of the argument. Adam, how do you phrase that instead of saying that?
What?
Your line is normally, who am I to say?
Who am I to say?
Yeah, exactly. The PC police need to back off and find some new pet project. Everyone just needs to lighten up. I'm so tired of everything being offensive. Old-fashioned fun in that time frame. Every Breath You Take by Police is a lot creepier song.
True.
Yes.
Should we play that again?
Stalker, that's...
A lot of songs, when we actually analyze it, are fairly creepy.
Sting's watching you. Every breath you take.
Every single one.
I'm here. And call me Sting.
Don't call me Gordon in my $60 million place in New York. It's worked out well for Sting. Yeah, if we end up analyzing all lyrics, I think we're going to be in pretty deep trouble, Adam. Don't you think?
Yes.
No matter the era. How has this outrage lasted over a week, but the rest of the outrage lasts 15 minutes at best? Come on. These are texts. What about pulling the robe off and It's a Wonderful Life? This show is established, by the way. It's a Wonderful Life. Overrated. Lighten up, Francis. I'm surprised Adam doesn't punch you sometimes.
So am I.
Yeah. Gentlemen, there was an article I read online regarding Wall Street's response to the Me Too movement. And the theme is to avoid women because dealing with them will ultimately result in trouble. Seems like a well-rounded way to do it. I can't trust
Look,
myself.
If I can't grope a woman and, you know, get all over her, what's the point of even being around her?
Yeah, I'll fire you then, you know. Seriously, the song says nothing about holding a woman against her will. Who does it offend? If that song and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer are bullying in secret, wait till they read about the guy who was nailed to a cross.
fair point.
Very good point. I think you guys are funny. I love the show. Could you please put out a public service announcement of people and their horrible parking jobs? Let's do that. Let's do that when we come back. Because we're going to start nailing people to crosses over their parking spots. That's next. People in parking lots are selfish, fill in the blank. Okay, however strong you want to go. It's all about me, me, me. And it stands out even more when it's winter, when it's snow, when the spots are limited, or when maybe it's so cold outside, maybe it's cold outside, you park inside, you're parking with the terrace, you're paying more, and still even inside these clowns, these blowhards reviewing all the phrases we used yesterday, don't care about the concept of staying within the lines. I would be all for it if the folks who own the parking lots, surface lots, inside, whatever it might be, give you an extra fine of some sort, Adam, if you don't stay within the lines. For it or against it?
For it. Especially like a pay lot. If you're over the line, you should be charged for two spots.
Both of them, right? It's not that difficult to be respectful about it. I mean, how often do you see, and again, if you have the car, Carter, where you think it's so precious, where you have to take two spots, number one, you better be paying for two spots. And number two, if it's that precious,
leave it at home.
Yeah.
Just, don't get that nice of a car then.
Yeah.
Don't drive it.
Yeah. Wow. Dave Adams telling us what cars we're allowed to drive now.
To each their own, I guess not.
I've told you this story about we were friends' bachelor party up at Cragen's, and it was peak time, so the whole parking lot at Cragen's was full, and we came back late one night, and there was a guy with a Cadillac who had parked right in the middle of two spots. And sure enough, the next morning, we were getting up to leave. There's Mr. Owner of the Cadillac talking to police. Somebody had gone around his car twice with a key. That's a little extreme.
Oh, I mean, listen, that's worse.
Gutless, coward.
Yeah, and by the way, leaving the note does nothing. You feel, for some reason, you've decided, you feel better about yourself.
That's better than key in the car.
Oh, absolutely. Key in the car is the worst of all. All right, how about this one? Story out of New York. An individual tragically killed himself after he lost millions with Bernie Madoff, right? He was a hedge fund executive whose fund lost $50 million in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. In court papers, his widow is accusing the psychiatrist of failing to prevent her husband's suicidal tendencies. Horrifically, he jumped off the 24th floor of a building about the middle of last year. She claims this, despite knowing that the descendant had attempted suicide in the past and advised him of suicidal tendencies, the psychiatrist failed to provide proper medication or hospitalize the individual. The suit also faults the doc for failing to refer his reeling patient to specialists. This individual could have prevented Murphy's death, the filing said. According to previous reports, the individual had been previously planning his demise for weeks, added his wife to the deed of their home. Where is our responsibility in that? I mean, that is a therapist and more power to anybody and everybody who is willing to find somebody to speak out about their challenges and be honest and open and blunt and direct. And if you need to go to 750 of them to find the right person, or if you find the first person right away, kudos to you. So, Adam, if you're a therapist, I make you now a therapist, and I'm seeing you, and I'm the person who's telling you, I've had this horrendous event, completely unpredictable event in my life. I've talked about killing myself before. I'm talking about it again. But you believe you have the expertise, the experience, the wisdom, the training to guide me through it. And you're doing your best. You're genuinely trying. You're checking on me. But I still take my life. Are you on the hook? Are you financially on the hook when I didn't listen to your trained words of wisdom?
That's a tough one to say. Even though I'm sure there's terribly negligent cases out there where doctors are incredibly negligent and missing signs and just too big of a workload, whatever the reason that might happen. I'm sure it has happened, sadly. I think it's too difficult to open that door because I just think there'd be good people who want to get into the profession to do it. I think that would limit them and saying, boy, I don't want to, I believe in myself and my abilities to, for lack of a better term, talk someone off the ledge.
Yeah.
They'd be gun shy to do that. And, so I would say that it's difficult to open that door.
We've seen something like this before, Dave, in a different way. Remember it was the high school situation, right, where the kid was so distraught and was it his girlfriend? Was it a female friend? Was just saying, just do it. Just go ahead and take your life. And
I remember,
she was held responsible. I bring that up because I would think if you are so cavalier, you're so derelict in your duty, then maybe. Because just to say there's no scenario where someone could be held accountable, I'm not willing to go that far. But if someone and an objective peers would say, wow, these are a lot of things I would try, or you know what, I might not have tried that, but I understand what he's thinking, and a person still takes their life, that would give a chilling effect, because part of what you want there is the confidential, I can have this conversation with you.
Yeah.
And now you'd be just saying therapists need to really have the authorities right there to try to potentially bring you in and prevent your free will.
There's an enormous amount of negligence, I think, that would have to be proven.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to say, first of all, even to think that even the best therapists know all there is to know about mental illness and, you know, what's going on in the mind of one individual person's head is foolhardy.
Yeah.
And there's no way to know.
I kind of get less than
is there that. A responsibility at some point, though, for a therapist to seek outside help? Because what if it's somebody who comes in and talks to the therapist about wanting to hurt other people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the therapist might think, okay, this is something I can deal with. I believe I have the tools to do that. You know, that's a much different situation. And that person then goes and does something bad to others. I'm thinking of the Colorado theater shooter, you know?
Yeah.
What responsibility does that therapist have to bring in somebody
else? Because we've seen those
laws
before,
right,
about what you are required to do. And it is different in those circumstances. Maybe we can circle back to this one when we have a little more time and get a little more feedback from others. Dara has just arrived. Let's do this. Let's pause. traffic and weather, and then planning with Dara. Are we done with the brownies and the bars?
I'll fight you.
Yeah. Adam, where did you stand?
He's got to get behind me.
Yeah.
He wants to fight you.
Yeah. Well, you actually do punch me. Dara contended that brownies and bars, and what was the other one?
Cookies, transitive property.
Yeah, that they're all cookies.
They're all cookies.
Brownies and bars are not cookies.
Oh, no.
Right?
If you in Radioland could see Adam Carter's face.
No, bars.
Separate category.
Brownie is closer to a bar, but a brownie's
brownie is
like
a bar.
Chocolate bar.
Brownie is a chocolate bar.
Yes.
But it's not.
But not a chocolate bar.
But it's not a cookie.
Not a cookie.
It's not
no.
a cookie.
No.
Guilt.
She thinks, you know.
They're all cookies.
No, Adam.
No, I'm pains, sorry.
Seriously.
I know.
Pains you to agree with me.
You know,
but
one is a little more, has a little more knowledge about food than the other here. But no, I think those are not cookies.
Just look at her cookies. And say, Dara, you're wrong. Go ahead. Look,
wrong.
It.
Cookies. Cookies.
Dave.
I'll just keep saying it. No, your people are.
What about this person?
We could do this for another half hour.
We could.
Week.
We could. Yeah. Or let's just do this. Let's have somebody bring us cookies, brownies, and bars, and we'll all be fine.
We'll figure it out ourselves.
Yes.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
As usual, she's showed up with all sorts of materials. Let's get right to it. You are suggesting that your secret to surviving the holidays, Kramarchik's.
I love Kramarchik's.
It's a great place.
Sing it loud and proud. Yeah, so the Northeast Minneapolis butcher shop, this is not breaking news. They've been open since the 40s, but I dropped in the other day and everything Christmassy, so good. They have so many interesting chocolate Santas. They have like the real, you know, Trolley Company gummy Smurfs. Like, oh my gosh, where were those when I was a 20-something hipster looking for the, you know, the killer $4 gift? Like, those are so good. And the frozen pelmeni and all of the cooking things. Like, you can get your smoked pork hocks if you want to make Hoppin' John, or if you want to make, you know, there's so many things. And I kind of forget about everything at Kramarchik except the cabbage roll. Have you had that cabbage roll recently?
No. But I will drive on my way here at times and head over to Kramarchik's and get some lunch. But I haven't done that in a couple months. This is going to remind me maybe it's happening tomorrow.
Yeah, and you can pick up so many great little stocking stuffers, so many little gourmet things like, oh, I get a fancy black currant syrup and then I can pour it in champagne and, you know, do that for a very nice greeter drink. And there's just so many things in there. And that cabbage roll, I stake my flag. That is one of the most delicious things in North America. That thing is so good.
Mm.
It's just, you know, rice and beef. It is perfectly cooked. It's inside the cabbage roll. And you get the mushroom sauce. I know a lot of people love the tomato sauce more, but the mushroom sauce is so good. The whole thing is just amazing.
All right. I'm heading back there. You've convinced me. You wrote about this. Mung Town.
Yes, I did.
Right.
I love Mung Town.
Give us more info.
There are two, you know, Mung Towns. So there's the official Mung Town, which is in the shadow of the state capitol in St. Paul. It used to be a lumber yard. It used to be Sher mm-hmm. Brothers or
that's
whatever.
The one I know.
That's the one you know.
Yep.
And then there was there's a bigger one even on Johnson Parkway. I think that's called the Mung International Market at this point. But anyway, Mung Town was, you know, it's like 200 vendors. Some of them are there only on the weekends. Some are there only in the summer. Some are there all year round. It is it's got to be the best, like authentic, you know, the most authentic Southeast Asian food, some of it in the country. It is just so great. You can go in there and get larb. You can go in there and get this kind of Mung specialty, which is a roast pork and greens kind of all together. And you have that with sticky rice. It is just flooringly great. And I've always wanted to interview the owner, the guy who founded it all, and kind of find out his story of, you know, his family helping American soldiers in Vietnam. And then, you know, just his father was just being hunted by soldiers, left the kids in the jungle. Like, can you imagine everything being like the amount of like stress where you're like,
yeah,
the only thing
no,
I can do
I
to protect
imagine.
My children is to put them in this jungle and come back. And, you know, just the story. I've got the whole story. It's in the magazine. It is just, it broke my heart. It opened my eyes. That place is amazing. He is amazing. All of it.
All right. Now, I have not tried that before, but that sounds very intriguing.
We got to go. We should
go. I would do that. Okay, tell me about this burger saga, this link you sent me.
This is such a long story. Okay. So I didn't even know that Thrill List bills itself as a publication for men. Did you know that?
No.
I thought Thrill List was just sort of another, like, it's BuzzFeed, it's Thrill List. Yeah. Well,
I don't go to it that often, but I didn't know it was gender specific.
When they come to cover something in the Twin Cities, then I already know it all, you know? So, and it's usually they do kind of a bad job, so I don't pay that much attention.
Is it more for people who might be visiting than those of us who live in whatever city it's for?
I don't know, because when they do something about Minneapolis, it feels facile and like, you know, the news from 2 years ago to me.
Okay.
And yet, you know, the other thing is like, oh, the top five burgers in Cleveland. It's like, if I'm not in Cleveland, it's of, you know, marginal interest. You know, I'm not that interested. It doesn't affect me. I don't have any reason to read it. Anyway, so Thrill List did a big list maybe 2 years ago, because they do lists, about the best burgers in America. And this food writer who I like very much, I've actually had him on my Saturday show. His name is Kevin Alexander. And he put this place in Portland called Stanich's. I never said that out loud. Stanich's, I guess, as the number one burger in America. And then they got totally overwhelmed and people were going in there. That's what you do when you publish a big list like that.
Good for that place.
Yeah. And not so good for that place. Then, you know, the next thing that happens, they put a sign in the window saying, like, we're overwhelmed. We need to take a couple weeks off. A couple weeks turn into a couple months, and then it's over. So then Kevin Alexander is, like, plagued with guilt. And he flies back to go see how Stanich's is doing and if he personally caused it to close.
Yeah.
He finds Stanich in there. They sit down, and Stanich is like, it was just family problems, but, you know, it wasn't your fault. And then Kevin Alexander walks out with, like, it was my fault. And he publishes this big sort of, like, I have ruined the world, and everything is about me, and it's so terrible. And I, you know, all these people were opining, you know, is it the list culture is ruining America, yeah, and it's destroyed this small business, and we, you know, what have we done with our attention? I read it the first time the story came out, when this story came out that was like, list culture has destroyed this little neighborhood restaurant. I thought, no, this is too much about the restaurant critic. I, as a young, you know, when I just first started out, I maybe would have written something like this, because mm-hmm. you're so becoming a critic is really confusing. Like, people tell you that you have all this power and you believe it, you don't know what to do, and like all this stuff is happening, and it takes a while to like get your head in place and how much you actually matter, which is very little, and how much, you know, like what you're really doing.
Trust me,
you know,
I know that well.
And so I read his story and was like, oh God, his editors did not protect him. Like, this is a, you know, if you have a lot of feelings as a restaurant critic and it's all about you, typically what's happening is you need a nap, you're going through a divorce, like something bad
yeah,
is
something
happening.
Else is
like,
going
it's
on.
It's not about you.
Okay. Was it
next,
really a family thing,
phase,
though?
Willamette Week goes, and they're actually on the ground there, and they start digging around. Oh, it was a family thing, and it was a ugly, bad family thing where he, the owner of the place, was convicted of strangling his wife, who worked on the floor, who was, you know, on the floor for 19 years.
That's a family thing, yeah.
You know, in front of his teenage child, she, in the divorce, you know, he tried to, I don't even know, like, the whole thing. Like, she had stage 4 breast cancer, and suddenly the marriage is, you know, on the floor, and she gets half his assets, and she, or their assets, she gets half their assets. He refuses to pay her. He's in contempt of court. Like, a mess, like
yeah.
a catastrophic mess that was all basically coming to a head at the same time they were named as the best burger in America.
Yeah.
And, all right, so Willamette Week publishes this thing, and everyone's like, well, that's, I no longer feel bad for the small little restaurant owner who was swamped by list culture.
Or the writer who wrote the story.
The writer was completely wrong. Oh, and then it goes on. Next thing that comes out, writer at Thrill List knew all of this, decided to just bury it. So
when he wrote his original story.
He had known some of it or quite a bit of it. And so he just thought, like,
he's
well,
a fraud.
That's not important. I'm going to put that aside. So then all of these other women, all, you know, mainly women critics around the country, like, rose up and are like, wait a minute. you knew about all of this stuff and it didn't strike you as important to the story? The woman who was the floor manager for 19 years, like, you know, leaves after being strangled, like this whole thing, and that didn't strike you as material to the story?
I'd say it matters.
Yeah. And so the whole thing has it has turned into, as the world turns, of restaurant critics because there just keep being new levels to
another
it.
Nugget? Are you going to jump in?
I just did. That's what I'm doing right here. So, and then the, you know, like so many questions come up. One, you know, what is the obligation of restaurant critics to look into court records, restraining orders, legal?
You find a place, smaller place here in town, and the food is amazing, but as you're doing your voluminous work, you start finding out all this information.
Or I don't. You know, like, have I ever in the, you know, process of like, oh, there's a new Italian restaurant on Dale Street, I'm going to go check it out, then drop down to the courthouse or all the courthouses to do background checks? Never. I don't do that.
No, and I don't think you should. Yeah. But if you did find out that information, what do you then do with your story?
Oh, well, I mean, that's a great question. So the James Beard Foundation, just this last year, came out with a new ruling, which was stop nominating places if you know that they are hotbeds of sexual harassment, if you know that a restaurant is, you know, a big steaming mess. Do not nominate it as the best restaurant because we don't want to be involved in all this.
Yeah.
And when that ruling came out, it was kind of like, well, you know, you're asking for judgment calls. There's this is a lot of drinking in this industry, and people send anonymous, you know, emails, and then they don't want to be on the record. And, you know, what am I supposed to do with that? I have no way of knowing if these things are true or not. And as a restaurant critic, sometimes I am in the absolute worst position to judge what's going on because somebody sends me a, like, you know, so-and-so is terrible. And then I say, well, you want to be on the record? And they say, no, I don't want to be on the record. That would ruin my life. And then you say, you know, what am I supposed to do then? Like, I'm going to call so-and-so and be like, hey, anonymous source tells me you're terrible. And then
that
they say,
interesting story.
I want to know who it is. Who did tell me you that? And, you know, what are you supposed to do then? Whole thing is just, I don't think that any of this can go into restaurant criticism. And also, no one should ever publish the story, which is like, me, critic, so important, ruined this burger place.
We have more items to get to, but let's also mention Saturday, 11 a.m., off the menu. What do you have?
We're going to have one of those famous, difficult conversations because I've got Robin Asbell on, who I love very much, but she's got a new book out about plant-based meat, which I hate. I hate the whole idea of it. So we're going to find
out. How come?
Because I think that vegans are wrong, out of control. Our big human brains need animal fats to live. And I don't see how kind of going down this road of pretending that we can all, you know, be vegan is really helping anyone. I think that a bunch of the climate science that people constantly cite is just propaganda and it's not right. And I'm all about eating animals, apparently.
Yeah,
so I'm having Robin on the show, and we're going to talk about it.
Well, you have a number of vegan items here.
I know. I have a vendetta now.
Okay. Because
they're very ascendant. Vegans are winning, and I am losing, and that's where this is all going, but I'm not going down without a fight.
Yeah. Well, we had the phrases the other day, because there's a long list.
Parody. PETA is out of control. They have this big billboard right now in Southern California that says you can't be a feminist and eat eggs because eggs are exploiting female chickens or whatever. It is the biggest load of hooey I have ever seen in my entire life. And I've seen some hooey in my life.
You're a hooey expert.
I am. I've seen mountains. And the problem is as follows. You have a baby. You need massive quantities of vitamin B to create that baby and not have troubles, right? And where do we get it from? You have to get it from things like eggs. So they're just setting up women to be malnourished, it's just such a bad situation. We do not have, you cannot be vegan in the North. It doesn't work.
But a lot of people are.
Yeah, they're
wrong.
A lot of people are now.
Yeah.
I don't see it as a long-term thing.
Dave?
Don't kill two birds with one stone, Dara?
Scone.
Give two birds a scone.
Yeah, give two birds a scone. Also, yeah,
we went through the list the other day.
Show me
so ridiculous.
That just to me, it's like you don't know anything about birds or scones. I could feed so many birds with a scone. I mean, at least 50.
Wait, so you're trying to apply some logic to this?
I go to the Kmart parking lot with a scone. I could feed many more than two birds.
I suppose, according to you, a scone is a part of the cookie chain, too, right?
No,
I
mean, it's like a muffin.
So. Yeah. Muffins are better than scones, too.
Muffins are better than scones?
Yeah, Dave. Are you with me? Are we going to separate here? Muffins or scones? Not one or the, you got to pick one or the other.
I think I'd go muffin.
Thank you.
Maybe because I have more experience with
and
the muffin,
biscuit?
Too.
Or are you putting a biscuit?
Well,
see, I'm setting a trap for you.
I love biscuits.
A good biscuit is great.
I don't think of a biscuit as my morning go-to unless it's biscuits and gravy. Because biscuits and gravy is one of the great underrated breakfasts of all time.
It is. It's one of America's great contributions to world cuisine. Biscuits and gravy.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a go-to place for biscuits and gravy here in town?
Oh, gosh. That is, I think that the last really great one I have is probably Red Stag. I think that's probably
that's
the supper club in Northeast.
That's good. Another item you have here is paying a ridiculous amount of money to take pictures with candy.
I'm so angry about this. This thing is coming to the Mall of America.
I don't understand what
this is. It's like a fake museum pop-up that's going to be there for a few months. $26 to $34 Candy costs extra. You get let into this space where you can take pictures.
What a bunch of suckers.
Seriously. It's all for, I think, corporate events and people are trying
to have.
Is it
for charity?
No, the charity is them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Instagram is like ruined too much.
So in other words, this is just so I can have a picture of myself with some giant candy or my kid with some candy?
Yeah, giant, like, like you're on the set of Universal Studios, except it's candy. Like, it's a really elaborate set. And everywhere I go now, people are doing that thing where they're, like, their friend is holding the camera and they're jumping up in the air to get the jumping up in the air. Forget about it. Tacky.
For $50, we'll allow you to come in here and take a picture of the studio.
I'll spill lifesavers everywhere.
Exactly. And tell you about cookies, bars, and brownies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.